Just message me after these videos for me to put on the box here and turn it on for you.
Services Committee will not go to order. It's 3:12 p.m. on Thursday, April 2nd, 2021, and take us on a fix. Sorry for the delay. We were dealing with some technical difficulties. Members present are Representative Dyka, Representative McCarthy, Representative Fields, Representative Zhang, Co-Chair, and myself, Representative Zolgas, the Chair. Let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to get out to the telephones for the duration of the meeting. Before we begin, I would like to extend our sincere gratitude to Martha Moore, the House Health and Social Services Recording Secretary, and the staff faculty of GMLIO, for stopping with me each day and helping to have a look at things and getting started today. Today, we will be referring to House Bill 133, the Equal Act Update Bill, by Representative Fields. We will then turn to House Bill 145, Expanded Funds of Support under Representative Snyder. We have 2 minutes to consider on that particular piece of legislation. Next, we will have an initial hearing on House Bill 106, Missing Persons Under 21 Years Old, House Bill by the Governor. Lastly, we will hold an initial hearing on House Bill 194, on which I will talk about for a fact by myself, Representative Zolgowski. Go ahead and begin with House Bill 133, Representative Fields, if you can put yourself on record and provide any comments, and then I understand that we will also hear from your entire testimony.
Thanks, thank you. This morning, we're going to answer questions on the internet. Your Senator, which I have been using since last meeting.
Thank you. Do you have any questions at this time, or are you ready to enter into the data testimony?
I also just know now.
Thank you. $643 million in invested assets. And we get the numbers they're providing are from ISS Market Intelligence. I can link to the source document.
Now, hold on, Bella. So, the 92,019 accounts in Alaska were
international. These are all people. These are people who are going to fix the law.
Well, so do you have numbers for what's in Alaska?
I don't have numbers for what's in Alaska. Just thinking in terms of this is part of this place of subscription. I feel like a lot of these cargoes in the last week is going to be graduated, meaning off, so to speak. And so, as a percentage of disincentive, to be independent, disincentive to working within one's capacity. And I think that's what we are learning from. Just look at the imagery that you have today. And I certainly apply the concept of. Enabling people to have freedom and independence, being able to provide themselves and comfortably.
I think that a lot of the things that we're talking about also aren't necessarily further oriented. where it's actually what I was doing with my husband, and that we would go into the homes of people with disabilities who lived independently in the community, who had their own apartments, most of whom had their own jobs, but because of a type of disability, they weren't able to earn enough money at their job to live financially independently. And, you know, but the fully financially autonomous, and also would not have been able to live independently if they didn't have somebody who could come in and help them do things like balance their checkbook, make sure the bills were paid, you know, and take them to resolve, you know, sort of routine errands that we do grocery shopping, those people, the kinds of things that would allow them to continue to live independently. And at a much lower cost of service, like, but if they were to have their income level, you know, just go over and over, and at that tipping point, they would lose those services, and then you probably need to be able to live in a much higher level of care service, you know, system, like, you know, for an assisted living facility or something like that, that costs the state a lot more money, and also comes with a lot less dignity. And so it's not just about the money, it's also about a small amount of services that can actually help you in a real life of full potential, and as well as your earning potential, but your full potential as a human being as well. So it's one of those reasons that I think people think this is very important, because we want to protect those people that are trying to become more independent and build a little more self-sufficiency and having a little bit of savings to take care of some of those things is really important. The important part of that is another level. Thank you.
Representative Page, in the department from the debt of revenue to health and social services. And this is an account page. Why is revenue taken out if they're managing money?
It's right here. I think in the draft that we originally sent over to Bank of Labor and Commerce, and we did change that back to revenue and CS and Labor and Commerce. Their debt then basically. You know, I have some different perspectives about the meteorological department analysis. And they decided that the people who are really still doing it in revenue, I would argue there's not a perfect department. And given that these are accounts, revenue seemed to be a bit useless. I think that was a consensus. I guess we just based on different numbers.
Which draft are you looking at this point?
Is there any other points of discussion on House Bill 133 at this time? All right, seeing none, I would entertain a motion to remove the bill from committee. Chair, I move the committee substitute for House Bill 133 with the 32-LS0450.SI, entering initial recommendations and attached to zero fiscal note. 1945, intentionally allow or require insurance to cover services that pharmacies are trained to provide before which they're not able to currently receive reimbursement for at this point in time. I think this is an important part of ensuring that we can expand on the human capacity of pharmacies to provide health care in the community. So that's what we're doing.
Any questions? Thank you, Representative Spencer, for bringing that forward. And I just wanted to highlight that this is an additional language that we were alerted to Director and others to further strengthen the ability to charge and pay the reimbursement of the services they're providing.
Pharmacists to enter the guidelines in which their scope of practice is able to operate. So they cannot prescribe beyond that in which they are allowed to enter the scope of practice.
Are there any questions or any discussion for this one? Or to
answer a question. We're going to look at all the drugs that a patient's going to be taking in the different complex when he turns out causing better and the consequences. I guess part of my question is, do pharmacists have access to the same kind of information to know that the problem's not going to cause when they're helping counsel patients on what options they should pursue? Or do they have the same position we're having? I'm assuming it's a good knowledge base, as opposed to experts in their field, but
thank you, Representative, for the privilege chair.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you for that, Dr. Watson. Are there any questions at this time regarding?
To the chair, the conceptual of page 491, it said delete that section and that there need for a period after services.
That's a great question. We're kind of agreeing there. When a motion comes before us, will likely be a recommendation to make technical improvements. We just ask you to look at it and it can be copied. Let's make them.
So,
sometimes we know. Yes, we will request that as we move the user across. Any other questions from Senator Kirkland?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to fully understand this here. So, I understood the testimony correctly on this conceptual amendment. It sounds like the concern of the existing language of the bill was too restrictive, if I heard correctly. This language is allowing for more. I guess, challenge our ability to organization and better move it. Back to me, Kirk.
Thank you, Representative Parker. For the first part of the conceptual amendment, it was citing that last part of the sentence, it makes it consistent with the Francis Collaborative Practice Authority by not overreaching and being prescriptive of what that agreement with that. So I think this particular one isn't seeking to make it any more or less widening the scope for pharmacists for to make sure it's consistent with the NCPA regulation. It's the second component of the conceptual amendment that most certainly is meant to further clarify that we are not broadening the scope of services that pharmacists can provide. Any questions or points of discussion on the conceptual amendment at this time? The objection has been removed as a further objection. All right, seeing none, the conceptual amendment has been adopted. Is there any further discussion on Hospital 145 at this time?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, with the amendments, I seem to limit the scope and to clarify things to the ministry's best. If I understand correctly, that the main thrust and purpose of this bill is to expand the ability of pharmacists to help control the patients, as in public testimony, and in particular, testing, I guess I'm a little bit confused as to what extent we're increasing and not increasing the scope of their ability to serve the community, maybe what power they have and what not. There's so much stuff there.
Chair, that was a brief background on that, back to the pharmacist who did a survey day. I think a quick summary of the intent of the bill was to provide clarification on the range of practices that pharmacists engage in already and have for quite some time to make sure that all of these statutes reflect the current state of practice. And with respect to some very specific things that they can do within testing, and vaccination and the naloxone to again make sure that detail is captured in the statute. And then the final intent of this bill was we have for quite some time that pharmacists providing that type of care appropriately so, but because we did not have the language that we do now have, they were unable to be reimbursed through insurance for the very same purposes that
most concerned with the level of manager of healthcare, where his patients were put a boots on the ground, but we don't expect that sort of behind the scene and very rarely do we actually, find ourselves in a primary care setting, other sort of locations, hospitals, and others, where those entities are able to bill for our services. So there's a limit there, and it's a limit that shouldn't be there because we drive national care for those positions. So this statutory amendment will not obviously change what we do for dispensing, but it sort of puts boundaries around our ability to be that manager of care in the middle. We're not going to prescribe anything outside of what we already can prescribe, vaccine products or more, before we're going to collaborate.
But was there some suggestion that maybe offering services as like a treatment for our pharmacy?
I would ask our doctor what we would do to refer to the writer to that question just to identify himself in the record.
Thank you.
a reduction in its level 3.5 cases from PA, it will now go to use rule number 7 would be appropriate in the report. Missing persons under 21 years old to present the bill today. Joining us in case we have Director Catherine Montana from the Division of Statewide Services of the Department of Public Safety. Dr. Montana, please introduce yourself for the record and present the bill that will ask members to hold questions until the end of the presentation.
Good afternoon, Chair. Thank you. Thank you.
1047, you're copying basically the subset from Article 47, 1041 over to 18, but 47, 1041 is several pages, and I'm wondering what else we might be missing by just not having one set to reference another one. It seems like it's 3.5 pages of statute and not one sentence, so I don't know what we might have.
Because we don't track it today, because we have it for the state law.
comments today. We will now open up public testimony on item 106. Are there any individuals online? Seeing no individuals online or in the room who wish to testify, I will close public testimony. And at this time, we will start the public testimony slide. Thank you, Dr. Moore, for making yourself and the department available for additional questions. The last item on our agenda today is House Bill 184 on the Tribal Child Welfare Compact by myself, Representative Zilkowski. We will take a brief recess and I will hand the gavel over to the chair speaker. Thank you, Madam Chair, for your report. Tiffany Zilkowski from House District 38, presenting by Bill and the Alaska Clear Data. Thank you, Dr. Steph Zilkowski. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It is my privilege to present House Bill 184 before the committee today. House Bill 184 is a very simple bill that seeks to protect implementation of the historic and landmark Alaska Tribal Child Welfare Compact by codifying it in Alaska statute. As we all remember, we had a presentation committee a couple of weeks ago. The Tribal Child Welfare Compact is an agreement between the state of Alaska and tribes seeking to help address deep structural inequities in the way that Alaska children are cared for across the state. We have heard time and again in our committee, both through the budget process and hearing committee, that OCS simply does not have the resources nor the reach in many rural and rural communities to provide the services and care that every child deserves. OCS is burdened with high rates of turnover, and its caseworkers carry caseloads at more than 3 times the national average, despite several recent efforts to expand resources for this essential development. Tribes, the state, and invited stakeholders have been working collaboratively on child welfare issues for roughly 25 years through a tribal state collaboration group. And I want to acknowledge and thank all of the invited survivors who have joined us today, as well as Nicole Brown from EFN, from whom we have borrowed a lot of this incredible content. The goals of this tribal state collaboration group are to strengthen Alaska's compliance with the Indian Child Welfare Act of 1978, to reduce the disproportionality of Alaska Native children in state custody, and build and strengthen the relationships between different stakeholder groups. Additionally, tribal Title IV E agreements provide tribes with a higher federal reimbursement rate than states for services outlined here. In foster care, guardianship assistance, and adoption assistance, as an example. Meaning state and tribal partnerships can leverage increased federal funding by income into the state and save our state dollars. As committee members remember, the government-to-government tribal child welfare compact aims to improve outcomes for Alaska's children and families by transferring specific negotiated services and supports from OCS and the tribal co-centers. The historic agreement was signed at the UFN in 2017 by Governor Walker and was continued in 2019 under Governor Bellamy. In FY18, tribes began developing programs, building capacity, and developing infrastructure to support the state's mission. By FY19, tribes continued developing capacity and negotiated expanded scopes of work, but the continuance of work was paused following a change in administration, and House Bill 184 seeks to assist that from happening. Since then, however, tribes and state have negotiated their differences and come to an agreement on the previously expanded scope of work, those being the initial diligent relative searches, ongoing relative searches, family contact, licensing assist, and safety obligations. And then, as a reminder, negotiations for the upcoming year are expected to occur within May. Tribes are able to provide a higher quality, and I just want to touch on that again, tribes can provide higher quality services care home for children in a lower-cost state by leveraging existing tribal resources and infrastructure that exists within communities. Continued commitment to this compact will improve outcomes and better serve our young people and families in the foster care system. The compact also strengthens essential services by engaging and empowering our most local governments, and as we heard in committee, families are likely to engage and work with their tribes where they may not necessarily engage with the suitable asset, thus increasing public trust in a very tricky area of state services. As we all know, the experience of children have during their formative years have a disproportionate impact on the lives of the women to lead. Every childhood experiences are qualified as traumatic experiences that children have between the time they are born and the time they turn 17. Studies have linked our childhood experiences to chronic health problems, mental illness, substance abuse by our life, and increased incarceration, which I spoke about during the budget subcommittee process. Next slide. In recent years, there has been a growing body of literature about adverse childhood experiences, and studies have tied them to a broad swath of adverse health conditions and behavioral issues. One point in particular that I would like to underscore is how costly adverse childhood experiences and the impacts that they have on an individual's life are. The literature is clear that if we do not invest in healthy families and children early, we will pay much more down the road, which we also had heard about in testimony previously on the final travel for compact. So if you take brief sectional analysis, or local sectional analysis, this is a one-section bill amending section 47.05 to add a new section to Article 1 requiring the state to participate in a tribal child welfare compact. So, why has Bill 184? As of now, the tribal child welfare compact is an executive initiative within the governor's office. Tribes and SDS have been fortunate to have the support of the governor's water credibility, but because it is not in statute, it adds significant ambiguity. This bill provides co-signers with stability and predictability so they can administer quality programs to vulnerable youth and families in some of the most remote parts of the state without having to worry about whether the compact will continue and be around in the future. In this committee and in our line of work, we hear a lot of numbers and statistics, and while this generally leads to good policy, it provides distance between the decisions that we make and the consequential effects that those decisions have on the families that we represent. And that is why I find this compact and this bill to be so exciting. The tribal child welfare compact is not just a process that in the state relationship and with our tribal partners. It's an incredibly innovative and forward-thinking policy that reaches kids and families in a meaningful way that we would not be able to do otherwise. And as we've also heard previously, we like to use nationwide research and evaluation of how Alaska is doing things, whereas this program is just in on the edge of policy and law. Thank you for the opportunity to present today, and I look forward to answering questions. I would, if the commissioner would be so kind as to allow us to take a good testimony and then to take questions.
Thank you,
Representative
Zabowski.
Yes.
So back to our time by the testimony of House Bill 184. Our teams will be hearing from Nicole Bologna as well as Melanie Benke, and also on my committee we have the Dan Kirkus. I'm sure she will correct my terrible pronunciation. Let me ask her to speak. We will begin with Nicole Bologna from the Alaska Foundation of Linux.
Thank you very much. My name is Nicole Bologna. I'm from Eastern Alaska, University of Phoenix General Counsel, and the Executive Vice President. I'm happy to be here today, and I appreciate the invitation to testify here before the committee, Madam Chair. And very briefly, because I know that we are running short on time and we have a host of other travel items to go. This bill is absolutely necessary to continue the good work that's been done over the last almost 5 years to cement the efforts in law and make the compact no longer at the will of the administration if there is a change in administration. And that said, I'm going to speak decidedly about Thank you, Madam Chairman. I am Melanie Banky, and I'm the president of CLARE. Can you hear me?
No. We hear you loud and clear.
Okay, I was having some technical problems earlier. I'm trying to get connected. CLARE is the regional travel consortium in the Bay State region of Alaska, and we've been promoting tourism successfully for over 40 years in our region, including operating a child advocacy center, which is brought from the Bay State of Alaska. I'm not going to expand on the merits of the contracting itself. We all know that providing services at a local level and with more local control results in better outcomes, whether it's our healthcare system, the BIA programs that we've contracted, and child welfare programs. So, the reason, though, that I feel like we really need this codified is, like Nicole mentioned, we need to be able to have the assurance that if we enter into this agreement with the state of Alaska as a partner, that all of the good work that we do will not be wiped away with an incoming administration. We're still negotiating. 4 years passed when we initially decided that we would pursue this, and I'm hopeful that we'll be able to make continued progress and move things forward in a quicker way. We're investing significant resources as part of the negotiation process. All of our staff time, our staff were participating in the negotiation process. Those are positions that grant funds, and we're using our resources to pay for their salaries and fringe. Just like Congress did when it codified our ability to contact healthcare services and BIA, we need the Alaska legislature to act as well to make sure that this is in law and not just something that could be changed every 4 years. We are willing to take on this responsibility. We're capable, and we want to see better outcomes for our children. So we're excited to continue to move forward, but we would really appreciate the assurance that the state of Alaska will not just write off the toll compacting process. So I really appreciate if you guys would please give us that assurance by codifying the ability to compact child welfare services into law. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms.
Banky.
Lastly, we have Vivian Perkins from the Association of Village Council Presidents.
Good afternoon, can you hear me? Thank you. Well, if I don't have to prepare my presentation, I'm just going to go from the start. My name is Vivian Cortez, the Chair of the Chief Executive Officer for the Association of Village Council Presidents. Thank you, Representative. Also, thank you to the committee for providing the opportunity to testify today. WCP, the Tribal Consortium for 66 Travel and Wildlife Trust on the Yukon Coast of Alaska. The WCP region is about the same size as the state of Washington and is part of the road system, meaning the only two origins by time or by in the summertime. The population of our region is approximately 26,000 people with a median age of 25, so we are originally a very young region. Our top three priorities are public safety, economic development, and community wellness. Community wellness problems regardless of safe and healthy. Children are the most vulnerable members of our families, so protecting vast and tribal organizations' knowledge, resources, experience, staff, and local presence make up experts in delivering care and resource services, especially in rural Alaska. By pooling resources and giving tribes the flexibility to deliver services in a way that works in our community, the state can utilize better outcomes for children in OCS custody. Tribes and tribal organizations have decades of experience in helping the federal government to provide services in tribal communities. Healthcare is an example of
She added her data on her job on OPS.
And I was wondering if either of those apps were almost broad enough to speak to your primary assessment that companies might follow. And is there anything in particular the word participate? It's sort of the key word in here. What does participate mean in a legal sense? And I also wonder if those platforms could provide you a comment on sort of what is the nature of the compact? That's your agreement before you come into your relationship. So if you could just speak to kind of the thought that went into crafting this language the way that we see it on the paper in front of us, I would appreciate it, since it is something new.
Sure. Thank you for the question, Representative Fields. For the intention behind the construct of the legislature as it's written is to give the most latitude to the governor and the state and its administrations, as well as the tribes. So the intention of not being too prescriptive is to ensure that this flexibility is heard in question previously on the travel job over combat. There are some tribes that are in the early stages of implementing the compact, and there are some tribes that are quite sophisticated in the advancement of where they are. And so, by keeping it brief, the nature is to make sure that it is both responsible for the state and the tribes. And it would recommend actually doing it both in things that I don't want to speak to, the brief that are working as it relates to participation.
Thanks, Senator. Essentially, my question was sort of around the thought process that went into writing this bill the way it's written, saying that it would be the first step of its kind. Specifically, what your thoughts on why the word participate is inappropriate, when we can apply our administrative participation in our welfare contacting. This seems to be pretty elegant language. We have the obvious excessive detail, so if you have thoughts on that. that the scope of a child welfare contract can change over time within the within the parameters laid out by this language. You would like to answer more.
In the presentation you were previously about the child welfare contact advice, you stated an interesting and very encouraging that we're in a state of pursuing economic tribes to better take care of the residents and prevent some of the incredible destruction and hardship that we've seen. This does seem a little bit awkward, especially because it's quite a few years in the slides. Five or six, you mentioned that the negotiation will take place in 2021. I think there's some discussion which I didn't probably answer the question, but it seems like we're getting the cart before the horse that I think that the negotiation is finalized before we're passing a law that say require performance from it. It would seem to me that maybe there will be a project for resolution supporting participation in the next year looking at now to, and I understand that it's a document that's renegotiated from time to time, but it seems kind of like, I guess the timing seems weird because it's still being developed, I guess.
So, great question. As was mentioned, there are annual negotiations that are budget place to update the agreements in place to have any ongoing discussion. So if we go back one slide, you'll see that in FY19, the contract was had been signed in 2017, and through 2018, there were particular agreements that tribes in the state have that were enacted. If you go to the next slide, you'll see that there were additional scopes of work that were negotiated. So there are annual updates that are made to the contract if the contract is already in agreement. Sure, so
I'm not the new coach.
Sure, so great question. The intention of the night vision was quite broad. It's to just require that there be, that it protects the child welfare compact in statute. So it would require that the state and the tribes participate in a global child welfare compact. The details related to the different scopes of work are not included, and the ongoing particulars about what's previously been negotiated is not included intentionally because, as was mentioned in testimony, those are updated from year to year. They may be negotiated. There may be some tribes that opt to participate at a particular level, while others may take on more flexible. So, simply what the bill does is just require that the compact remain in place.
Thank you, Representative. So, what I hear you say is that we, in fact, have already signed the compact. We signed our first one in 2017, and present using here. And that this is a policy bridge that has carried over both from the Walker administration into the Donovan administration. And what you're proposing here in this bill is essentially to clarify what it is that we've already been doing without being too prescriptive and telling Governor Donovan that he must contract for tribes with the U.S. contract for us. So we're saying you shall participate in tribal contract.
Thank you for that. And I think that's very accurate. And it's not just for being overly prescriptive for this particular administration, but as we heard, this has been a compact and an agreement and a working relationship that has spanned bipartisan administration. And so the intention of keeping it broad again is to make sure that there's latitude for incoming administrations, but to protect the good work that's been done to date.
This is the first time ever in the country for something like this, but there's no division of words. I'll have to be short, succinct, you know, well, but it's, I think there's a lot more words behind that. Make sure that I can be so proud of pushing that.
Sure, my question through the chair. I might ask Ms. Lanzanich's online to speak to the difference between contracting and contracting and the
Thank you.
2026. On Tuesday, we will have that conference with the Virginia on HB 184. We will also have your initial hearing and public testimony on HB 160.